And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast live from the MIT Sloan blah blah blah, where we are joined by the head honcho of this conference and the general manager of the Houston Rockets, Daryl Morey. How you doing?
Zach, it's a pleasure. An annual tradition.
I don't think it is a pleasure. You look worn out.
I'm very worn out, but it's definitely a pleasure.
The beard, which is the source of much controversy, is making you look a little haggard right now.
I'm definitely haggard, and yes.
Haggard is a good word.
Streak is
haggard is a good word. It's a good descriptive word.
It's a solid thesaurus word.
You were late to this podcast. I believe you were watching two computers play chess against each other, which is so on brand for this podcast that it's, or for this conference that it's almost laughable.
I thought you were going to say for the podcast.
No.
I was like, it's just epic what's happening. And it's basically the future played out. We're all watching a traditional chess engine. Just saying the words traditional chess engine make no sense. Like, it's...
Engine? Is that the last word of that phrase?
Engine. Yeah, it's a computer that evaluates trillions of moves a second, and it is being absolutely crushed lately by a computer that has never been done anything but taught how the pieces move. And it's beating this thing that's been curated for 50 years that beat Kasparov and things like that. So, it's basically like the computer's taking over the world, and it's pretty interesting.
Skynet.
It's happening in chess first, yeah. And no one knows how this new computer is really beating everything else. Yeah,
I kind of wish I'd watched it now.
Yeah, you missed.
Instead of mocking it, I went right into mocking.
Well, mocking's fine before there's understanding.
That's true. Exactly. Now we have to come to a place of... I'm just saying, two computers playing chess against each other.
That's how basketball played out, too, I think.
Yeah, at the Sloan Conference.
Early mocking.
It's more predictable that at the Sloan Conference than, like, LeBron's coach being in trouble in his first year in a new place. It's like a plot twist that's too predictable. We won't talk about that. True or false, there is a Sloan organizer's party at the end of the conference.
That is true
or false? One of them got so rowdy that it ended you had a tie around your head like a headband doing karaoke.
That is a true story. It's a very true story. Yes.
What song?
It's very blurry. It was Taylor Swift, Trouble, I think. Is that a song? Trouble?
I think that seems like a song. So this
Trouble.
Is recent. This isn't like 15 years ago.
This is like 8 years ago. Yeah. This is back in my young days.
Wish we had video of that.
I think there is even maybe video.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's on the cloud. Everything stays in the cloud.
Someone also told me this year you tried out a new look at a game. You tried out a maroon jumpsuit.
Where are you kidding?
And I said, is there photo evidence of this? Like, you wore a maroon jumpsuit to a game?
It was Adidas. You know, I'm always supporting James Harden. Adidas. Jumpsuit, my daughter thought looked good on me, and I took a lot of heat for that one. Probably deserved.
There got to be photos. Photos have to exist. You went to a game. There were 20,000
sure
people there.
Photos. Whenever we do these podcasts, I feel like it's about even 2 minutes in where viewers are dropping off and
we're
switching.
Good.
you do more research than anyone I talk to. It's awesome.
Clearly about meaningful things.
You do more research than most, TV courtside analysts, before games.
Last year I hit you with your rental car return policies. I don't know if you remember that.
I should expect this, that you're gonna find crazy stuff that happens.
So I had a conversation with Kevin Pelton a month ago in Los Angeles, and I asked him, who is the biggest threat to the Warriors in the Western Conference? And I said, I kind of think I have an answer that maybe might surprise you. And he said, well, I'll give you my answer first. And he said, the Rockets. And I said, the Rockets. That's my answer,
wow,
too. That was a month
so
ago.
So must be true.
I said a month ago that the – and this is when you were like Clint
and actually
was –
actually, we looked dicier then.
Yeah, Clint was out.
Chris was out.
But I just I said I still feel like the fully healthy version of the Rockets is the biggest threat to the Warriors. A month later, I'm less confident in that answer.
Wow, now it went down. You're just contrarian then. It makes no sense to be less now.
Yeah, but I just feel like I've watched the last two games you've played that I've watched you won, right. Charlotte and I don't remember
Miami.
What the other one was. I didn't watch
Miami.
That game.
Okay.
I just feel like, and I wonder how worried you are, The problems on defense that dogged you early in the season have not corrected themselves in a way that is making me think, when is it going to happen?
I thought that would gel, and what you're seeing is not gelling.
Yeah,
is what you're saying.
Defensively. Offensively, we know what you are. We know what your identity is. Defensively, last year you finished whatever, 5th, 8th, 7th, 3rd. I don't remember. This year you're like still 23rd or 24th.
Right. Yeah, we're...
What's
nowhere
happening?
Nowhere near good enough to win.
So yeah. is the switch just going to be flipped in the playoffs? What's happening?
Well, we've seen switch flipper teams. You know, the Cleveland team that eventually won was absolutely switch. In fact, I remember talking to David Griffin at the time, like this time actually, because I think he came to MIT conference at that time. He thought they had like no chance, and it wasn't one of those false, you know, sort of all downplay. He was like, they were legitimately in a bad way, legitimately had, yeah, and that team famously had a lot of problems and sort of came together, you know, with an amazing team performance and great players. So, you know, we've got a wide range of outcomes. We feel like we will be better than last year's team going into the playoffs.
Interesting, really?
Yeah, just... I think the key variable was when Chris came back, how was he going to look? And he looks great.
He looks really good.
He looks like last year. Obviously, James is as good or better. Clint's taking a little time to ramp up. I don't know if that's something we're learning about him, but he started the year slow. There was like everyone wants to blame certain things for the start of our year, but the reality was like literally everyone was playing bad, like the entire team. Not bad, but like
Clint's rebounding was not where it was.
It was way down, and it's a little down even back then. It like really peaked at the start of James's like I'm putting the team on my back run. He played great for a lot of that, then he was out for the end of it. So I'm hoping Clint, as long as Clint ramps up, he's obviously critical to RD. We've had, you know, I hate to keep going to the same issues, but like we. You know, last game we had three rotation players. Yeah. We had Erica, we had now Fareed's a rotation player, obviously, and we had someone else out, someone important. Oh, PJ was tossed in like the first 12 minutes. So, yeah, I mean, maybe it's naive, but, you know, we look at our lineup last year and this year, obviously our main five are still our main five. And then we really like what Fareed, Austin, Shumpert. We haven't really seen what – oh, Shumpert was the other guy out. We haven't seen what those guys can
do. You traded a first for Shumpert.
Yes, we did. We traded to go from Knight to Shumpert.
Yeah.
There's a lot of aspects to that deal.
Well, you got off money, too.
Yeah, we set ourselves up to be more flexible in the future. That's how us GMs say that.
Yeah.
You got to learn the GM speak when you take over a team, Zach.
Yeah, it's never going to happen.
Happened to John Hollinger. I told him it was going to happen, and then it happened.
It happened. You spoke it into existence, like LeVar. Do you have?
Oh, you're so dismissive of this concept. So Larry Durker was a media guy. He took over the Astros.
Don't get off the subject. We're now 2 years running.
I want you to have a team before Bill Simmons.
I want us to run a team together. In fact, and we've targeted Phoenix. 2 years ago on a podcast, I don't know. We had a debate. Which team should we just take over? And we would ruin, let me be clear, we would ruin the team. The team would be way worse. But we said Phoenix is like, it's a big city.
Yeah.
It's a market that is somewhat friendly. You can get players there. Yep. It's like, and they're terrible. We should take it over. And I believe that more than ever now. But it's not going to happen.
It's happening. We're talking it into existence.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe Sarver's listening and he'll do something radical. It would be a splashy move. He likes splashy moves.
Bill Simmons,
president of basketball operations, splashy.
I think every GM in the league would be excited for this, just to see Bill having to take his ideas into action.
It would be great.
Right? Normally when he has an idea and it doesn't work out, he'll just be like a few weeks later, that was a mistake. Or even nothing, but you know GMs are stuck with it. So
yeah, you're stuck with the consequences.
So we'd enjoy that, I think.
Do you have? I know you guys track everything. Do you have data that suggests that in the last two playoff runs, James Harden has actually suffered from fatigue related issues? That he has worn down? Is there physical proof that this is a thing?
There's no data, but to be fair, I don't even know what that data would look like.
I don't know if it would be maybe his accelerations, his force metrics, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, nothing showed up in that kind of stuff. No, I mean, obviously that's the narrative. Humans love narratives. So based on our data, we're managing him through the season fine. Obviously, Mike's strategy, and it's a long-running strategy before they had low data, is, you know, we more or less at this point show up to play games, right, and put very little wear and tear. So, you know, if we had a younger team, it was different. It was different when we had a younger team. But now we're a team that there's only one thing to do, win the title, and we got to have our guys at their peak.
The guy that I'm actually worried about wearing down is PJ, because he's the only real four on the team. Obviously, you played Fareed a little bit there when there were injuries. And just that guy is such a grinder. He's playing more minutes than he's ever played before. Are you worried at all about him wearing down before the playoffs, or is he just an iron man?
We're an older team. Generally, those teams have done better in the playoffs. But, yeah, it comes with a trade-off. It comes with a trade-off of, like, I was talking to Tillman Fertitta, the owner, and we're talking about the team. He's involved and everything. And I said, you know, older teams, you know, do better in the playoffs, but it comes with a trade-off. Like, you play an athletic young team, they can make you look bad on some nights when they're at 100%. And
that was Thunder Spurs, when they would occasionally have a game where the Thunder looked like they were playing a different sport, and it would overwhelm the Spurs. And then the Spurs would overwhelm them with skill and smarts. It was a fascinating
situation. We beat Miami just has our number. Like, they have, like, a bunch of guys that play hard together, athletic, all those things, and they always seem to have our number. We only beat them this last game because James went, you know, supernova again, which is amazing. But it also comes with that trade-off, which is a minor one, but it comes with the bigger trade-off, which is, yeah, for sure, we have a higher injury profile. PJ's one of them. I don't know if worry is the right word. We again, GM speak for when you take over Phoenix. We risk manage.
You risk manage.
Risk manage. Yeah, we risk manage that.
And you load manage.
We load and risk manage, yes. My load management is high right now.
Do you ever, when you got Chris Paul, it was like a monumental thing. Obviously, Chris is a Hall of Famer. He's going to be a top five point guard. Well, that might be a controversial statement. I shouldn't say that without listing it. He's going to be in that conversation for top five, six point guard of all time.
He's already top five.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's not controversial.
No, it's not controversial.
I just didn't want to go. I just want to say it and, you know, having.
No, I think you're fine. You won't get the Twitter anger.
Now,
people.
But a year and a half later, Beverly Williams, Harrell, pick, cap flexibility versus paying CP 40 plus for the next 3 years. Like, it's a conversation. I don't think it's a completely fair conversation because you got to game seven last year, which is the point, right?
Yeah, based on how we would look at it, although it's frustrating, but we would say we're already in the money no matter what they do.
Really?
Yeah, because when we were at 50% championship odds, like,
yeah.
There's no other – obviously, you got to win it, and we have a very solid chance this year again. Higher than almost any team, to your point in Pelton's conversation. You know, if you can get – the idea of that trade was to get ourselves in position to be a championship team. We did that last year. We feel like we're there this year. We have to prove it this year. We haven't played well enough to really say that, but we feel like we will be. That's the idea of the trade. Like, you can trade off anything as long as you get a title.
Yeah, that's Windhorst saying it. Like, every trade grid becomes an A if you win a title. That's what he said.
Yeah,
like,
no,
if the Kevin
right
Love trade,
that.
Should we have traded Kevin? No, it's all an A. Everything's an A+. If you win the title, it's all an A+.
Yeah, I think Bill has something like that. You get 5 years or something. I would love to have we had five more years. But so I guess if you get to 50% title odds, what do you get from Windhorst? You get – is it A?
I don't know. You have to tell, Brian is the czar of his own trade
grades,
rules.
Yeah.
Your habits of watching games are famous. You're like Billy Bean in Moneyball. I don't know if you're throwing things.
I do throw things, but I have not smashed a window. Although I don't think that happened. I think
that may have been.
Movies aren't always true.
I know it's shocking when you
actually that this happens. But no, he's famous. I do have trouble watching. Ask your question. I'm sure someone told you something horrible.
No. No one is. I just in the 0-4 whatever. Streak in game seven. At what point in the 0-for-whatever have you checked out of watching the game?
So the amazing thing about the 0-for-what Well, we know it's 0-for-25, not 27. The NBA admitted they missed two fouls on two of the threes. So it's now officially 0-for-25.
You will take that one for a long time. You will hold on to that one for a long time.
I'm holding on to that. We also rebounded a lot of those misses at a very high rate, thanks to PJ mostly, which was great. So the game ended. And I'm like catatonic. The thing that's, when you take over Phoenix, the thing that sucks about being a GM is like, as soon as you lose game seven, you're in immediate motion thinking about exit interviews. Like, there's no time to even like process the fact that the thing you've dreamed about your whole life just got effed. You know, it's really frustrating. Someone told me we were 0-for-27, at least on the box score. And I was like, what? No, that's impossible. I was like, there's no way that is because we were in the game.
Yeah. They,
like, conceptually, forget. You can't go 0-for-27 and be in a game. So I was like, immediately, like, hey, it's not true. Like, double check. They were like, no, it's true. And I was like, Jonathan Fagan maybe told me that. And I was like, wow, we must have rebounded the heck out of it, which we did. I mean, we were out playing them, out energy. You know, they beat us. You know, they beat us. They're great. Great team, one of the all-time great teams.
I was going to ask you, what do you remember the buzzer sounds? Like, where are you? What are you doing?
I know
where
I was. I was in the back room where I watch when I know I'm not going to handle it well. And I wish there was a better shot. I was immediately with Gerson Rosas and Monty McNair and, you know, just, okay, Keith Jones, we got a plan. We got to plan exit stuff because the players legitimately want to just go to a beach, which I don't blame them.
Yeah.
That's what I would want to do, and so they want to literally talk about the season the next day
immediately.
I think it's a bad process. Someone who likes process, I should think about a better one. Maybe we all go to the beach.
Yeah,
maybe we could get cabanas and do our exit interviews. Then we can have. Stories about how people didn't come to the cabana for their exit cabana.
Yeah.
Yeah, then that would be a huge story. This would be great for ESPN. Like, a whole new set of content.
Yeah, blowing off the exit interview became a thing now. It's now a thing. You can't name the player that did it, but yeah. I can. Kristaps Porzingis. It became a thing.
Yeah, no, it's like, what's said in the exit meeting? It's like, I'm fixing this. We didn't win the title last year, but right. I'm gonna fix the exit problem and make more content for ESPN.
Let's do a couple of quick ones and then we'll get you out of here. Since we're at the Sloan Conference, let's talk about sort of conceptual, you know, big picture things. I think the play-in tournament has a chance to be a real thing. And I think sooner than people expect. Like, if you gave me 2025 as the over-under, I might take the under, but it would be close that it could be a thing. So you support it?
I strongly support. I think the thing I strongly support is the conceptual thing that Commissioner Silver's on, which is very smart. It's like, it's better when there are tiers in the playoffs, like clear tiers. Like right now we're fighting between we're probably fighting between, to be fair, 3 and 6.
Three to six is the tier in the West right now.
Is the tier. I mean, there's a meaningful home court, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's not all that meaningful. But if you get a bye for 1 and 2,
support byes, I think, right?
I absolutely support byes. I just think there should be tiers in the thing. And we should not make sacred, which is why I like the play-in tournament even more. We should not make sacred the seeds past 5. Everyone, like most sports that play 82 games don't even let this many people in their playoffs. So, like, why is it a sanctity of, oh, the eight seed's getting screwed by the play-in tournament? Who cares?
Yeah, I don't care. Nobody cares.
Some people care. They killed it last time.
Yeah, but so the eighth seed people, whoever finishes with the eighth seed might care, but whoever finishes with the 10th seed now cares. The people who benefit are outnumbering the people who should care.
Now you're thinking, Zach. That's good. Yeah. I agree. I mean, I would have like 1 and done. To play into the top four, like,
ooh.
I propose, like, I think it was 6-10. Am I doing the math? No, I can't do math.
7-10,
8-9, just one game. That's one, and then a bye for 1-2. I mean, I had it all worked out.
The proposal that has coalesced, that
the
supports
proposal
the
from the league was developed by a committee, and it very much looks like it. It's like 10 will play 9.
No, as I understand it, 7 plays 8, and the winner gets 7.
Right,
9 plays 10. The loser plays the loser of the other game.
Only a committee would come up with that.
I think that's actually pretty good.
No, I dislike it.
Too complex? Yeah, too many games?
Well, they're like, no, it gives too much, like, who cares? Like, no one cares who makes these lower seeds, right? So.
Oh, your point is like.
I just want to get to the playoffs.
Yeah, it's too much, like, seven and eight are getting too much of a benefit.
Yeah, and their
just
whole reason is
together.
Like, well, eight should, it should be hard to knock eight out. It should be, you know, 9 and 10 should have to play in, and like, that we would not, if we started basketball in 1940, whatever that it started, and we didn't have, we had six seeds, no one would care that the playoff tournament is 8-7. So
I like it. You're being meaner. I like that. Your proposal is meaner to the lower seed.
Oh,
just so you get
mean.
In, get out.
If ever I'm a low seed, I want the league to be mean to me.
Okay. So yeah, you got on it. Yeah.
You play 82 games. So like, you should get something, a bye, like not have to do a play-in game. Like all, you should get stuff. We get almost nothing.
I'm surprised. Last one, and then we'll let you. You're fried. The Sloan Conference fries all of us.
Yeah, it's a good time to give me though. I might just go create unplugged.
Well, maybe this won't be the last one. Then we'll see. I went on Get Up on a Wednesday, and Mike Greenberg organized a big segment about tanking, which has apparently come to baseball too.
The Astros like did an amazing job.
I guess the Orioles sort of semi-tanked.
I don't
season.
Follow baseball enough. Yeah. I follow the Astros because Houston, obviously.
And the noise, I'm actually slightly surprised.
Cubs did it, I think. I heard.
Did they?
Theo when he first got there, yeah.
The noise in basketball hasn't gone away. Now, part of that is that Zion Williamson is a, you know, once every 10 years or whatever level of prospect. But, like, Cleveland beat the Knicks the other night, I think. Yes. And the New York papers framed it as, like, a huge setback for the Knicks. And I actually think, like, by lumping the first three teams mm-hmm. together, the worst three teams together, the league, I think that has worked. Like,
yeah, no.
those teams don't have any incentive to compete against each other. And even the fourth team is just a minuscule.
Yeah, it's only 2%.
Like, I'm surprised at how much noise there still is, because I think the only thing that this was intended to do is to stop the race for the absolute bottom.
Correct.
And I think it's done that.
Yes.
My point to you is, what I don't know that we've ever talked about, what is your favorite anti-tanking measure? Because we agree, tanking actually, tanking works in the sense that if you do it like the Sixers did, it really mm-hmm. is your best odds of constructing a championship roster. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if you like the Mike Zarin wheel, if you like the
the wheel. I like the wheel conceptually, but I do think the league has a responsibility to sell hope.
Sell hope. That's Cuban's line. You gotta have to be.
No, he's right. Yeah, and I don't always agree with Mark, but in this case.
Well, other people have suggested let's have the unweighted lottery where all 14 teams get the same chance at every pick, or at least the first three picks. Malcolm Gladwell once pitched the best team gets the first pick and the worst team gets the last mm-hmm. pick, so you totally incentivize the other way.
I've thought a lot about this.
Yeah.
Mike even more. And I have to be a little careful. Some of these things, you know, zone into stuff I'm not supposed to talk about. But I know I can talk about the draft. And so I think if you have a draft, we're not far from optimal, honestly. I wish I had a bigger solution. I do think you want to have competitive balance. You want to sell hope. You want to stop the race to the bottom. I'm one of the strong proponents of what the league did if you have a draft. So I've carefully said that there are non-draft options that I think are probably superior to having a draft. But
you're not very subtly hinting at that.
Doing my best. I just think.
So you're an abolish the draft guy. I didn't know that.
I think that's a clean solution, but I understand. Again, I understand why the league maybe doesn't want to do that. So
my thing with this, I like what the league did. I think this step is only a small incremental step, but mm-hmm. it's done the thing that it's designed to do. My thing with the unweight the lottery or put all 30 teams in the lottery mm-hmm. or do a totally random draft or switch the incentive so that winning teams get more of a chance at the best picks are the thing that stops everyone in their tracks, because those things all sound great.
Mm-hmm.
We do reward losing.
Right.
There are definitely bad side effects to that. So flipping the incentives the other way sound great. But then you put this to people, like, you have to be okay. And some people are and some people aren't. You have to be okay with, like, what if the Warriors got Zion Williamson? What
you
if the 65-win
okay
Rockets got the number one pick? Because that will happen. And my thought, my theory
that's
is
why they went to the unweighted, to the weighted lottery, sorry. And I would have just stuck with it. Like, I'm fine with all 14 flat, but I get, again, the issues. I don't have a problem with good team. Like, I mean, the Bulls hopped up and got Derrick Rose.
Right, that was 14-1. That's yeah. And that's why they flipped. I believe that was.
No, that wasn't 14. Orlando hopped up. Orlando. You're talking in the 90s. I was saying Chicago was from 9-1 for Derrick Rose years ago. And people were mad about that because they were a decent team when they added him. But you had to be okay with that. We went from 5-1 in Houston for mm-hmm. Yao Ming. I have no issue with teams jumping up to get a high pick. That's fine. I'm fine with, if you're going to have a draft, I'm fine with the totally flat odds across, which is how it started for lottery, and I'm fine with the.
Just the lottery teams, though, not the playoff teams.
Just the lottery teams, yeah. Because I think that kink is fine. Like, either make the playoffs or you're out.
Do you think a team, if you did that, if you went back to the totally unweighted lottery, mm-hmm. do you think a team would ever, I don't want to say tank out of the eighth seed, but I could see a team that's like 10th mm-hmm. instead yes. of going all out for the playoffs, sort of being
like,
eh,
yeah, I could see that. Yeah. When I was in Boston years ago, we got the truck and beep backed our way into the playoffs as in 2004, I think.
Okay.
We had no business being in the playoffs. The Indiana Pacers, as the one seed, beat us in four games by an average of 25 points.
Yeah.
And yeah, we should have. We didn't. We were trying to win every game. Yeah. But that would have been a year to be not in the eighth seed.
See, I think you can't. I think tanking out of the eighth seed, even if you did it subtly, would be too obvious for fans. But I would see a team that's 10th and like two games out being like, yeah, you know what? We're not going all out. We're not going to play our best players 38 minutes. We're just not going to go all out.
That's why I carefully said, if you have a draft that's somewhat lottery based, that, you know, wherever you put the odds, there's going to be some negative consequence. There's going to be some unintended effect. And so
that's why, yeah, but that stops people in their tracks, because there would be a world in which the best team got the best college prospect. And I think if that happened, you would have a huge subset of people being like,
I mean, it happens now. The best teams get the best possible free agents.
Well, that's why.
That's happened to maybe some recent teams.
Yeah,
maybe.
I don't know. I
can't recall. They might have played us.
Good Sloan Conference this year for you?
It's my favorite, honestly, because, you know, we had Obama last year. And frankly, for me, I was like, well, great. Like, what are we going to do? What are the students going to do now? Like, we've hit some peak. And so, at least for myself, I was like, let's just do fun stuff. So we got curling. We got like,
There's a whole curling thing going on. There was apparently a curling tournament. The curling gold medalist is here.
Yeah. Tyler George, who won the gold with the shoe, the frayed shoes, and became a, you know, national hero. He's here, and he was taking people on in curling. I mean, it was awesome. Yeah. So just try. I finally did the soccer panel I've been wanting to do, where I point out all how soccer has all these problems. Whenever I want, like, I went on a Adam Carolla just hour long soccer rant.
I wish I had seen that.
Yeah.
What are the problems with soccer?
Oh my goodness. I'll refer you to the rant.
Okay.
But, I would say this at a high level. I just perceive a lot of the issues with basketball at the start when I first got into the pro level in early 2000. They're all there in soccer. Like, all this inefficient play. A lot of focus on the beauty of the game versus just how to win. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, analytics is here to come ruin soccer.
Okay.
That's basically, yeah. And make it better.
It's interesting, the beauty of the game versus how to win and how polarizing.
Yeah,
your own team's style is quite polarizing. It's funny.
Yeah, no. I think anytime you focus in a pure way on winning, you're going to have people have not be comfortable, whether that be Sam Hinkie at the Sixers with an extreme strategy to optimize their win odds, or whether it be us with Coach D'Antoni and our player set, you know, brutally optimizing how to be more efficient on offense. You're always, it doesn't matter which which sport, which anything, there's going to be a backlash. It's just is.
Maybe you can consult for the Croatian National Soccer Federation and teach them how to become more, I mean, they've become more efficient. Maybe this is the way they can keep the momentum going. To have you ruin, make them the guinea pig for ruining soccer on the international level.
Yes. I want to start the launch and squish soccer club. It's just all field position, not possession.
Away with the beautiful game.
Just go to the MIT Sloan YouTube links.
Okay, I got to watch it. I got to watch it. All right, Daryl, you got to go. Thank you for making
it. Men and Blazers guy who you know. You worked there, yeah. There at Grantland.
Yeah,
years ago. So.
Years ago, Grantland.com. But that's the second podcast Grantland came up on today. That makes me happy.
Does that makes you happy?
Yeah, of course.
I was worried you might get some email from Jimmy Pitaro or something like saying, what the heck?
I think everybody has moved on.
Okay,
it's been several years now.
The healing has happened.
The healing.
That's good.
I think
that's
so.
That's good. You seem to be in a good place about it. You're about time to run Phoenix, though, I think.
Well, they got to go after Bill. I would just be an underling there. My job when we do podcasts, 25% of my job is to talk Bill out of crazy trade ideas. So that would be my job with Phoenix.
That would literally, yeah. You may as well get paid for this.
We could
job.
Actually just do that.
All right. Thanks, Zach.
All right, Daryl. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.